John Bachman, who pierces people's face. The K is for the kill, L is for the lover, and the M is for the mutiny, and I wish it didn't happen.
Pirate radio, pirate radio, pirate radio, arg, arg, arg. Pirate radio, pirate radio, pirate radio, where's my drum?
Now the N is for knots, oh no, my bones are sinking. The B is for the peg leg that keeps me standing up. A Q is for quantum leap, R is for the rum, and the S is for the scurvy, which I wish I didn't get.
Pirate radio, pirate radio, pirate radio, arg, arg, arg.
That's underneath my boat. And B is for Mukitas, who plays a sour note. W is Tiasis, X marks a spot. Why? Cause I'm a pirate.
Pirate radio, pirate radio, pirate radio, arg, arg, arg. Pirate radio, pirate radio, pirate radio, where's my grog?
This is WSQT Direct Action Radio, broadcasting on 88.1 FM from the heart of occupied Washington. We are news from the front line. We can be reached at WSQTRadio@hushmail.com, WSQTRadio@hushmail.com.
Welcome to Palestine Today, service of the International Middle East Media Center, www.imemc.org, for Monday, August 23rd, 2010. 12 Palestinians abducted by Israeli troops as political leaders challenge the idea of direct talks with Israel. These stories and more are coming up. Stay tuned. On Monday at dawn, Israeli soldiers kidnapped 12 Palestinians in different areas of the occupied West Bank and transferred them to a number of interrogation centers. The army claims that the kidnapped residents are wanted, but did not reveal whether they are members of certain Palestinian groups of resistance factions. The kidnapping is part of a daily campaign carried out by the Israeli army against Palestinians living in the occupied West Bank, including areas that are supposedly controlled by the Palestinian Authority and the security forces of President Mahmoud Abbas. In the Gaza Strip today, Israeli soldiers invaded an area east of Rafah City at dawn. According to eyewitnesses, the Israeli army, accompanied by a number of tanks and military bulldozers, advanced 300 meters into farmlands located in al-Nahda area east of Rafah and bulldozed farmlands while firing at random. Over the weekend, a group of right-wing Israeli settlers set fire to around 5 acres of Palestinian farmland south of the northern West Bank city of Nablus. The settlers came from the illegal settlement outpost known as Ihya and torched farmlands in Khalit Abu Shreika near Jalud village, then fled the scene on foot. The attack is just the latest in a series of arsons and beatings carried out by the settlers who seek to expand their outpost in the northern West Bank and to construct new illegal outposts on Palestinian lands. The arson was followed by an Israeli military invasion of the Palestinian village, during which Israeli soldiers also fired tear gas canisters at the local residents. The settlers who carried out the arson were not pursued or arrested. In political news, the Hamas party elected in 2006 to represent the Palestinian people has challenged the decision by rival party Fatah to engage in direct talks with Israel without preconditions. In addition, legislators from across the political spectrum in Palestine voiced their concerns concern about the decision by the Palestinian President Mahmoud Abbas to engage in direct talks with Israel. According to the legislators, the previous agreement that was made in 1993, instead of new talks, which they believe will result in negotiating away even more of the Palestinian people's rights. President Abbas was pressured by the U.S. and Israel to engage in the talks with a threat that international aid would be cut off if he didn't. But many Palestinian people believe that Abbas doesn't represent them, and his term as president expired in January, and he refused to hold new elections. And finally, a group of 39 Palestinians who were exiled by Israel since 2002 are seeking a return back home. The men were exiled to the Gaza Strip and Europe after they sought refuge in the Church of the Nativity in Bethlehem in April 2002. They have not been allowed to work or to receive visits from their families since they were sent into exile more than 8 years ago. The exiled men hope that the Palestinian president, who has no actual power over the situation, will appeal to the Israeli authorities on their behalf. Thank you for joining us from Occupied Bethlehem. You have been listening to Palestine Today from the International Middle East Media Center. For constant updates, please visit our website at www.imemc.org. This report has been brought to you by George Ishmawi and Hussam Kassis.
The growing debate over building a mosque and community center near the site of the terrorist attacks at Ground Zero in Lower Manhattan has launched a multi-city bus ad campaign claiming to offer refuge to former Muslims. Bus ads questioning Islam are running in San Francisco, New York City, and Miami. The ads are sponsored by the group Stop Islamization of America, run by conservative blogger Pamela Geller. According to the Christian Science Monitor, her aim is to help ex-Muslims who get in trouble. Geller claims she started the campaign in response to a Florida teenage girl who ran away from her Muslim parents after converting to Christianity. Rifka Barry made headlines last year after she claimed her father threatened to kill her for becoming a Christian. Detroit, the city with the highest concentrations of Muslims in the U.S., refused to run the bus ads, and Geller sued the Detroit Transit Agency. She claims a controversial campaign, sponsored by a group of atheists last year, ran on buses and billboards in many cities and read, "Don't believe in God, you're not alone." Although offensive to some, the ads were deemed free speech. In Florida, the Miami-Dade Transit Agency initially pulled the ads, but reinstated them when threatened with a potential lawsuit.
Afghanistan, yesterday, NATO is reporting the death of four U.S. soldiers from three separate insurgent attacks, at least one being an IED attack. Kabul, Afghanistan, today, roadside bombs killed four members of the international occupation forces in Afghanistan on Monday, including an American, two French Marines, and a Hungarian soldier. Three other occupation soldiers were wounded. Afghanistan, Friday. NATO says coalition forces accidentally killed three Afghan policemen in a friendly fire incident in northern Afghanistan. NATO says Saturday that Afghan security forces were under fire from an unknown number of insurgents, called for air support Friday in Jowzan province. It said two helicopters responded and fired a Hellfire missile and 30-millimeter rounds. NATO said an investigation of the site later showed that three members of the Afghan National Police were accidentally killed and several more were wounded by the air weapons team. Nearly 3 years ago, George W. Bush announced a surge of U.S. troops to Iraq, similar to what Obama is now doing in Afghanistan.
This will require increasing American force levels.
Last week, the last combat elements of that surge were withdrawn in defeat. Don't let them tell you all U.S. forces are out of Iraq, even though combat troops have left in defeat. The number of mercenaries is being doubled, and non-combat U.S. personnel are still under fire. Multinational Force Iraq, meaning the U.S. military, is reporting the death of the United States Forces Iraq soldier while conducting operations in Basra province, Iraq, on Sunday the 22nd of August. This is after the supposed withdrawal of all U.S. combat troops. Al-Masiriya City, Iraq, Saturday. A roadside bomb on Saturday dawn hit a convoy of the U.S. Provincial Reconstruction Team, causing no casualties or damage, according to Oswald Al Iraq News Agency. Kirkuk, Iraq, Friday. The U.S. vehicle patrol was attacked on Friday by a thermal bomb in central Kirkuk without causing casualties, according to a senior security source. Allegedly, the patrol was distributing food, but who knows? Baghdad, Iraq, today. Bombing attacks killed at least 3 people and wounded at least 20, according to police. 2 of the dead were from a pair of mortar shells hitting a residential neighborhood. Friday, Iraq. The Islamic State of Iraq, which includes Al-Qaeda in Iraq and other allied Sunni insurgent groups that have outlasted U.S. combat troops, took credit for the suicide bombing of a Baghdad army recruiting station that killed 61 Iraqi army recruits and wounded at least 125 other people in Baghdad's deadliest recent bombing. Nasiriyah, Iraq, today. Protesters slugged it out with police over the ongoing lack of electricity. Final score, 10 police and 6 civilians injured. Think we have it bad with Pepco? Iraq's power grid produces only half of what the country needs, meaning anybody without a generator cannot refrigerate food or air condition their home at all. In Iraq, like here, it's been a long, hot summer. Mr. Barack Obama, all U.S. war objectives in Iraq were defeated except for the overthrow of Saddam Hussein. Exxon and BP are not allowed to own Iraqi oil fields. The radical free trade and privatization experiment proposed by Paul Wolfowitz died under fire in summer 2003 as fired Sunni workers joined insurgent groups. Al-Qaeda in Iraq did not exist before the war, and unlike U.S. combat troops, is not even pretending to leave Iraq. Muqtada al-Sadr is unarrested and his Mahdi army is unbeaten and unbowed. Lastly, Mr. President, there is no stable government in Iraq 5 months after a Florida 2000-style election. Does this sound to you like a viable template to repeat in Afghanistan? If not, now's the time to cut your losses, bring all the troops home from both of these wars today.
And no amount of money you could give me. I ain't going back again. I ain't going back again. You won't see me back there again. No, you won't see me back there again.
Afghan President Hamid Karzai has issued a decree ordering all private security firms to be disbanded by the end of the year. By that time, thousands of security contractors working in Afghanistan must join the Afghan police force or cease operations within 4 months. The one exception is for private security firms hired by international groups such as embassies or NGOs, which are required to remain within their compounds and be registered with the Interior Ministry. Karzai stated in his November 2009 inaugural speech that he would put an end to both foreign and domestic security companies by November 2011. The recent decree clearly expedites the deadline. The U.S. warned that such rapid withdrawal would be impossible to complete by the deadline and may slow down reconstruction and development. NATO commanders rely heavily on both foreign and Afghan security contractors to protect bases and convoys. According to the Associated Press, the U.S. claims the Afghan Interior Ministry currently licenses 52 security companies, a small fraction of the 30,000 security contractors working in the country. There have been an increasing number of complaints that private security firms, including Blackwater, aren't well regulated and operate in a manner that endangers the civilian population. Karzai spokesman Wahid Omar said, "It's not about regulating their activities. They have developed into alternative forces. The security companies have to go."
Protests at the homes of corporate criminals aren't just for those who torture animals anymore. On the 22nd of August, Members of Code Pink showed up at the home of Blackwater's founder, Eric Prince. They were there to demand that he stay in the U.S. to face criminal charges for the infamous Nisour Square shootings, where his men murdered 17 innocent civilians in Baghdad back in 2007. The protest began with the delivery of a letter to the home, which was thought to be empty due to rumors that Eric Prince had fled to the United Arab Emirates.
All right, so here I'm going to put this up on Eric Prince's door, and this is a letter from the new company called Pinkwater. Dear Eric Prince, on behalf of U.S. taxpayers, we say shame on you. Through your company, Blackwater, or Z, as you now like to call it, stole hundreds of millions of dollars. Your employees also killed innocent civilians in Iraq, and you should be held responsible. Don't run away to the Emirates to escape prosecution. Stay here in the USA and face the consequences of your actions like a good Christian.
That would be, yeah.
Sincerely, Pinkwater.
Ms. Pinkwater.
It turned out that at least Eric Prince's family was still there. At first, they invited Medea Benjamin into the house, only to turn around and demand that she leave, physically assault her, and then charge her with trespassing and have her arrested after being invited into the home when Miss Prince realized this was about Blackwater's crimes. Here's what it sounded like when Miss Prince decided to physically push Medea Benjamin out the door as she was attempting to leave under her own power.
I'm getting pushed out here.
Whoa, ow!
So Eric Prince's family is actually here. They haven't left for the Emirates. They're all inside. We sat there and waited for the police to come because she said she'd called the police. And I just wanted to make sure that the police knew that we didn't trespass. We were asked to leave and left. And instead, she had me arrested.
A homeowner's lawyer to come out and talk to you.
They still have called us. It may not be the homeowners, but the people at the house have called us and told us that we have to come up here and make sure you guys get
out. Well, she said get out of
need your IDs.
She said get out of our house.
Yeah.
So
it's okay.
She never said get off the property, though.
Your ID in the car, if you find it for me real quick, please.
So I was released from jail after 5 hours. This is the complaint that was filed by Joanna Prince, the wife of Eric Prince, and it accuses me of trespassing or remaining on the property of Joanna Prince after having been forbidden to do so by an authorized individual. I had to put up $500 for a bond.
Remember, Blackwater's founder, Eric Prince, is looking at facing criminal charges for allowing his mercenaries to shoot down 17 men, women, and children at Nisour Square, the youngest being 9-year-old Ali Kanani. Yet he and his wife have the nerve to charge someone with trespassing after being invited into their home. It's Eric Prince who should be posting bail, or maybe not, since he's clearly a flight risk. Medea Benjamin of Code Pink was arrested for trespassing in a place in which she had been invited, unlike U.S. troops or mercenaries in Iraq. Hey, Eric Prince, you stinking water buffalo turd. Remember, in D.C., in the United States, and in Iraq, there's no sleep for the wicked. Suppose Army recruiting ads had to have side effect warnings like drug advertisements on TV do.
The United States Army may not be right for every patient. Side effects can include distress, disillusionment, bitter resentment, isolation, traumatic and post-traumatic stress, sociopathic behavior, uncontrollable sobbing, uncontrollable violence, prosecutions for war crimes, prosecutions for domestic crimes, loss of contact with loved ones, loss of ability to love, brain injuries, blindness, depleted uranium poisoning, flashbacks, horror of death, horror of being away from death, loss of the use of limbs, loss of limbs, death, suicide, excruciating pain, the desire to feel excruciating pain, overwhelming rage and misery, loss of hearing, punishment by the Army for failure to obey illegal orders, punishment by courts of law or by enemy forces for obeying illegal orders. Torture, humiliation, shame, dangerous habits of blind subservience, or the wasting of what could have been the best years of your life. If you experience any of these symptoms, deal with it, sucker. You already signed your name on the dotted line.
Anti-war activist Anne Wright is running for the D.C. Council chair position in the upcoming elections. On the 18th of August, she spoke at a candidates' forum in downtown D.C. on the subject of education. She was the only candidate to address the issue of JROTC, or Junior Reserve Officer Training Corps, in the D.C. public schools.
Also wanted to raise the issue of JROTC in the schools. I think there is...
Yes.
Get that out.
Yes.
It serves a purpose for some students. A lot of schools rely on that as a way to instill discipline among students. But I think it should just be seen as one possible alternative. Students should be told there are other kinds of volunteer programs you can do. There's service abroad that you can do. It's not necessarily going into the military. It's not a panacea for people to get jobs and benefits in the future.
That's right.
We need to make sure that we have equal access for groups that are showing alternatives to JROTC and not just funnel kids into that program.
This is WSQT Direct Action Radio, broadcasting on 88.1 FM from the heart of occupied Washington. We are news from the front line. We can be reached at WSQTRadio@hushmail.com, WSQTRadio@hushmail.com.
For the past 64 years, the School of the Americas in Fort Benning, Georgia, has been graduating assassins, dictators, and death squad leaders to do the dirty work of the elite in Latin America. The taxpayer-funded SOA has left a trail of violence and suffering in every country where its graduates have returned. Hundreds of thousands of Latin Americans have been tortured, raped, assassinated, disappeared, displaced, and massacred by those trained at the SOA. Enough is enough. Every year, thousands gather in Georgia to protest U.S. military involvement in Latin America. Join us at the gates of the SOA this November to honor the victims, celebrate the resistance, and pressure our government to shut down the school once and for all. From November 18th to 21st, we will have live concerts, speakers from around the world, street theater, workshops, and more. For more information on how you can stand with us to end the injustice, visit SOAW.org or call 202-234-3440.
The 15th of August, as the Arizona Diamondbacks prepare to play at the Nationals Stadium, formerly D.C.'s gay enclave, immigrant rights protesters showed up demanding that Major League Baseball move the All-Star Game out of Arizona. These protests have dogged the Diamondbacks ever since Arizona passed the racist SB 1070 immigration law, held unconstitutional in court, but still in appeals.
Really in the name of...
When the game was played, the fifth inning, halfway through, was interrupted by protesters charging onto the field and a banner being dropped over the infield wall. Doesn't take much to stop a baseball game these days, and although four people were arrested and two barred from the stadium, according to one report, the mission was a success.
Okay, I'm here with Sara Uribe. You're an activist here in Washington, D.C. Tell me what happened today at this stadium.
Today we had a few brave people run into the field to send a message that the Diamondbacks cannot profit off of hate. They're here to send a clear message that the Arizona law, SB 1070, is a racist and immoral law, and it needs to be terminated in its full completion. So it was very exciting to see them in the middle of the stage, sending it to all of the people here, and sending a message that baseball needs to change, it needs to clean up its act, and it can start by protesting and continuing the boycott against the Diamondbacks and moving the game out of Arizona.
It was a very brief protest. I missed it, but I understand that police caught these activists. How many people were involved?
There was one person who ran onto the stage, and then there were two other people who came out with a banner. Unfortunately, some security guards blocked them before they could unfurl the entire banner. They were wearing t-shirts that said "Legalize Arizona." And there was another banner drop that happened over here on this side of the stage, too. Again, it was somewhat interrupted by some of the other people. But I think the message came across.
Just in case it didn't, here's what things sounded like. The protest outside the stadium that most people going into the game had to pass on the way in.
Don't give in to racist fear!
Immigrants, I welcome you!
Don't give in to racist fear!
Immigrants, I welcome you!
Arizona, you control!
Racist laws have got to go!
There were over 50 protesters demanding that Major League Baseball comply with the economic and cultural boycott of Arizona by moving the All-Star game to somewhere else. And there were no more than 10 of the right-wing Minute Clan Nazi types counter-protesting. They were heavily outnumbered. That's an interesting chant. Arizona, new Jim Crow, racist laws have got to go.
Some of those that work forces on a safe that bar crosses. Some of those that work forces on a safe that bar crosses. Some of those that
Arizona's SB 1070, that had it not been struck down in court, would have allowed cops to stop people and demand immigration papers, is very much like the past laws that were applied to African Americans in a time of slavery, and is very much in the spirit of Jim Crow. Now, some people might point to majority support among Americans elsewhere for Arizona-type legislation, but remember, Jim Crow also had majority support, at least among white voters it did, that is.
Hey, baseball, let us face it, Arizona is racist!
There's another ugly little backstory to anything happening at the National Stadium, and that is that the National Stadium, just like Arizona, is stolen land. Arizona was stolen by force by the United States from Mexico, which had in turn stolen it by force from indigenous people. Well, D.C.'s baseball stadium sits on land stolen by force from D.C.'s gay community, where an entire neighborhood was bulldozed to make way for Major League Baseball.
Some of those that work forces are the same that bar crosses. Some of those that work forces are the same that bar crosses.
Well, DNA, it's natural. It's the building block of life. And when the good Lord put it together, you know, I think he did it upright. He made lots of different organisms, a complex web of life. Each one dependent on another, and so the circle it closed up tight. But then along came a man and a microscope, and he separated the genes. And when he put them all back together, he made lots of strange, unnatural things. And now food crops grow on the ocean floor, cows that grow on trees. Now the ranchers gaze while their oysters graze on grass that depends on a hormone spray in our genetically modified world.
Although crude oil stopped gushing from British Petroleum's blown-out Deepwater Horizon oil well after a custom metal cap was finally lowered on top of the damaged wellhead a mile under the Gulf of Mexico on July 15th, a permanent fix has still not been carried out. Government officials say further pressure tests and risk assessment will be necessary before the well is permanently killed through the injection of mud and concrete via a relief well. During the 86 days of the BP spill, some 4.9 million barrels of oil poured into the Gulf of Mexico in the nation's worst environmental disaster. A report released by Georgia's Sea Grant College program and the University of Georgia concludes that up to 79% of the oil released into the Gulf of Mexico has not been recovered and remains a threat to the ecosystem, contradicting a National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration report that claimed only 25% of the oil remained in the Gulf. apart from billions of dollars lost in regional tourism and the seafood industry, the long-term effects of the oil and chemical dispersant on human and marine life are unknown. Hugh Kaufman, senior policy analyst at the Environmental Protection Agency's Office of Solid Waste and Emergency Response, blew the whistle on EPA and OSHA's cover-up of the environmental health effects on first responders at the World Trade Center site in New York City after the 9/11 attacks. Between the Lines, Scott Harris spoke with Hugh Kaufman, who explains why he believes that the EPA is now involved in a similar cover-up of the hazards present in the BP oil spill.
Well, I mean, my perception is, unfortunately, that the response to this has been similar to the 9/11 case, where they tried to, both BP and the government, downplay the impact of this. And frankly, there were a lot of false statements being made and continue to be made about how much oil and contaminated material is even left. I mean, you've heard some of the press statements that only 25% is left. Yet when you look deeper into the statistics, you find that even the scientists whose statistics they use think there's more like 75% of the oil and contaminants still down there.
Hugh Kaufman, I've read a quote that you felt that the Environmental Protection Agency that you work with and the National Oceanic and Atmosphere Administration, NOAA, were really sock puppets for British Petroleum in covering up the toxicity of this oil dispersant called Corexit. You want to explain to our listeners a little bit about what you meant there?
Well, sure. I mean, the problem that was, it was not just me, I just happened to be a whistleblower, whereas other people in the system are a little bit more nervous. I'm almost 70 years old, so I can retire down the line. But most of the technical people inside are very disappointed that EPA and NOAA, in fact, has been doing what's in the best interest of BP in terms of these toxic dispersants, as opposed to what's in the best interest of the environment and the public. Now, let me explain. These are hazardous materials that were being pumped into the water at a mile down, as well as being carpet bombed over the area to try to make the oil disappear under the surface. By doing that, you're increasing the toxic reaction to the oil that's being atomized into droplets by the dispersants, as well as increasing toxicity with the dispersant oil mix. That will have a very adverse effect on marine life underneath the surface, but will make it look on the surface like there's, in fact, less oil. And that's what BP wanted. BP wanted the optics of less oil on the surface so that they could try to hide the volume of oil that has, in fact, gushered up, which will save them billions of dollars in fines and penalties. And will make it almost impossible to clean up the area in a timely fashion. Let me explain. In the case of the Amoco Cadiz oil spill, which was a very big spill back in 1978 off the coast of France, some of that oil was dispersed and some of it was allowed to be broken up, weathered, if you will, by natural forces. The oil that was not dispersed with dispersants started breaking up, and it's pretty much all been resolved within 5 years back in the 80s. But the oil where dispersants were used to atomize the oil, that oil has still not been eaten by the microbes. And so to this day, over 30 years later, that oil is still presenting a problem in that area that the oil spill occurred. So you're going to have the same problem in the Gulf of Mexico because they use so many dispersants down there. It's going to take a lot longer for that oil to be broken down by natural processes as opposed to if they hadn't used the dispersants.
Hugh, what about the seafood industry in the Gulf of Mexico? I know there's a lot of testing we hear about now of the seafood stocks, and to see what's safe and how soon the fishermen can get back into making a living off their trade. They're catching shrimp and other fish that they sell across the country. What's your understanding of the situation there right now?
Well, first of all, there's been so much misinformation put out there about the seafood being safe, and that, for example, just the other day I heard government people making the statement that they haven't found any contaminated fish. Nobody buys that, certainly not even the fishermen buy that, in sworn testimony to Congress that there's no dispersants in the fish that they've tested. And then with a follow-up question for a United States senator, they have to admit, no, we haven't tested the fish for dispersants. So until such time as the government can get more realistic and be honest with the people, I think the public is not going to believe anything that the government says, and the fishermen don't believe it either. In fact, evidence comes up all the time that there is serious contamination in the water, and there's a lot of fish in the water, and no one believes that fish can swim and breathe in that contamination and not be contaminated. Certainly, experienced doctors in the field don't believe it. Neither do most marine biologists.
That was Hugh Kaufman, senior policy analyst with the Environmental Protection Agency. He was chief investigator on many contamination cases, including Love Canal and Times Beach, and was the originator of EPA's Toxic Cleanup Superfund program.
Is your SUV running low on gas? Is your wallet been running on fumes lately? Well, this is Behind Pollution, offering blowout prices on regular, plus, and premium at every BP Behind Pollution gas station, where you can get a gusher of savings filling up that Ford Excursion or that Hummer. And never mind our blown-out oil well at Macondo in the Gulf of Mexico. Never mind all those oiled pelicans. And never mind this burning hot summer of global warming. Never mind the voices that tell you to boycott BP for the horrific things Behind Pollution has done in the Gulf of Mexico. Just keep filling up that SUV. Just keep enjoying that gusher of savings the blowout prices at BP gas stations are bringing you. After all, you never liked seafood much anyway. On the 21st of August, Peter Bass, a senior executive with Goldman Sachs, received a protest at his home over Goldman Sachs' status as a major stockholder in Fortress Inc. Fortress made over $100 million in loans to puppy-killing Huntington Life Sciences and is the reason Huntington Life Sciences still exists. Huntington Life Sciences is a contract animal testing laboratory where undercover investigations have caught researchers punching beagle puppies in the face and dissecting live monkeys without any painkillers. After a protest at a Novartis executive and Chevy Chase, protesters showed up at the home of Peter Bass, an attorney for Goldman Sachs.
Area.
Here comes another one.
Peter Bass is to blame.
Oh, but an animal suffered in pain.
Peter
Number of cops building up fast.
Shut them down.
Camera
and the need to convince Goldman Sachs to end their ties with fortress investments and therefore bringing down the lifeline of Huntington Life Sciences. And to the neighbors and those around us who question the effectiveness of these tactics, please know that over 200 businesses have dropped their ties with Huntington Life Sciences due to protests such as these. There's nothing personal about this to your neighborhood. We just want your neighbor to stop doing business with an animal-abusing, puppy-killing, kitty-cat-killing, primate-handling business like Huntington Life Sciences. So, Peter Bass, until next time, until all our friends will be back! We'll be back! We'll be back! We won't tell you where!
Police response was astounding. 7 cop cars on 5 protesters, and even after the protests were done, the cops followed people through the streets, leapfrogging and even driving on the sidewalk. At least a quarter mile away, and there's still a bunch of cops following people who are just going back to the metro. Just going and going and going. Almost like that time back in December when people were followed away from Jennifer LeRae's house. Did you get a load of this? Cop cars driving on the sidewalk just to follow animal rights activists.
Breaking laws, endangering lives.
These cops did nothing but follow people around, but even illegal arrests and blatant harassment have never stopped these protesters. Metropolitan Police Department, Goldman Sachs, Fortress, all your cops and all your lies, these folks will never compromise. Because in TC there's no sleep for the wicked.